Now, the right hand of God and fellowship with insects. The right hand of God or fellowship with insects. Good morning, everyone. Martin Zender here, closing out the week with this consideration. The right hand of God and fellowship with insects. Yeah, door number one or door number two. I encourage you, ladies and gentlemen, to... Well, I really can't encourage you because only God can put a hunger, a desire in you for His presence. And apparently it takes a miracle of sorts to pull one away from our happy little home here. After all, this is a home that contains bugs and insects, referencing the show yesterday of a friend of my friend's who does not want to be snatched away into the heavens because he will miss bugs. That's right. He is a bugologist, or as I was corrected, an entologist, as a person who studies bugs. This man was apparently, he's from England, and he was the bug man for the Queen. The Queen has needs concerning bugs. She has a royal collection of bugs, and this man bugs her about it. And he has attended to the Queen's buggy needs, the needs of the bugs for the Queen. And so this man has actually, this is a report to me. He has been known to climb fig trees so that he can eat fresh figs. Loves the Israelite stuff, bugs and figs. You'll find this in the wilderness of the desert. Very appealing, very attractive. However, I would encourage us to, if you are at all able, to anticipate a day when you might extricate yourself from the love of insects or any other temporary pleasure here on earth. There are other pleasures besides bugs. I won't go into them, but the pleasures of the right hand of God will far exceed those. Only God can put this desire in you. I can't force it on you. I can suggest to you that whatever, and I know it's new, it's strange to think of going to another realm. It's different. I understand that, but I pray for a spirit of wisdom and realization to come upon us. Look, I'm as sentimental as ever. It took a noble effort to take my affections away from my old boyhood home. Yes, I it was a great place for me, and it's hard to let go of these things. I'm with you. I understand. That's why I pray for a spirit of wisdom and revelation to all of us. Now, when I visit the Smithsonian Museum, the Natural History Museum in Washington, D.C., I never go into the geology section. I despise... I don't despise, that's a strong word. I hate, yeah, that's what I want. I hate the earth and its interior and all the rocks that make it up and dirt and things of the earth and things of nature. Oh, I like animals, but as far as the rocks, I don't give a crap about them because they don't have a soul. Some people are fascinated by gems. They'll stare at a gem and they'll be like, ooh. Yes, I stared at I looked at the Hope Diamond for a short period of time just because of its history, because of the people who touched it, the people who owned it, the storied history of the Hope Diamond. I didn't give a crap about the diamond itself. It's a soulless, lifeless piece of nothing that that only has value because humans give it value. And yet, having said all this, I'm going to give you a brief lesson with ensuing gesticulations concerning the gems mentioned by God in the Revelation, in the construction of the new Jerusalem. The only reason I do this is because God thinks it's important. God loves jasper, and He loves gold. I don't give a crap about jasper or gold or amethyst or diamonds or rubies or emeralds or pearls. I don't care. But God cares, so I'm going to force myself to care about this. Because I feel like I can't move out of this section unless I wax eloquent upon these things that come from the middle of the earth. And because I do not care about them, I am going to pretty much quote A. Enoch here as he writes about it. He himself says he couldn't get excited about gold, but this book talks about translucent gold, gold you can see through. And I have to admit that as I look at Mr. Knox's words in his book, The Unveiling of Jesus Christ here, my template for this lesson, I can get interested in how it looks. It's going to like, the light's going to shine through this stuff. So it's not like it's going to be a rock on display behind a glass case on a blue velvet backdrop. No. That would be the Hope Diamond. No, it's going to be something you live in on the New Jerusalem. It's going to be something you can see through. It's going to be something that's going to thrill you optically and, optically. And as I go through these gems, and I feel I must do this to complete this chapter in Revelation, as I go through these, keep remembering that you're above this, that you have a realm above this, and that if this city looks hot, and it's going to look hot and great and sexy and translucent, then our cities, and yes, we will have cities in the Celestials, are going to exceed this in glory, like big time. Yeah. So, let us begin. And as I do this, this is my plan for the rest of the series. I'm going to finish chapter 21. And then I'm going to get into the end time scenario. I have some puzzle pieces to put together. I have some more research to do on this. But it might be 10 parts. It might be 20 parts. Whatever it takes me to get through the end timing, the timing of Israel, which will give us a clue as to the timing of the snatching away. Am I going to set a date? Y'all think I'm a date setter? No. I'm going to possibly set a date for Israel. I'm going to set a year for Israel for sure, and you can figure out the rest, but I'm going to help you. I'm going to just be your tour guide through an end time scenario, and I hate the phrase end time because it just smacks of Christian. Christians have this end time. So I'm going to think of another phrase. I haven't thought of it yet, but I will think of another phrase instead of end time. But it does have to do with the end of the aeon, and it does have to do with time. Time is very important to God. God is very precise. He put the moon and the sun and the stars in the sky for seasons. The sky don't lie. The sky don't lie. The stars, though they be far, will bring us into Revelation. I wanted something that rhymed with star there, but it wasn't occurring to me, so I just threw Revelation in there. Wisdom above poetry. Now, that's my plan. And then after I cover the timing of Israel's enlightenment and give you some very strong, I think, persuasive clues about our times in the body of Christ, because we also have times. Then we're going to finish with chapter 22. And then when I do that, that will be the end of the Revelation series. Hasn't it been grand? I'm not going to hurry through it. I'm going to take my time. As you know, if I happen to go on another trail in between there after chapter 21, before the end time scenario, I will rename end times. I'm going to put that down as one of my tasks. I will not use the phrase end time again because it's too Christian-y. Listen, but I have a lot to say to you people out there. I'm hearing about it. Some of you are saying that so many people have predicted the end times, Martin. So many dates have come and gone. Yeah, and because of that, there is no date, right? Because many people have been wrong, somebody won't be right. Is that what you're telling me? Then you fall in the trap of the scoffer of 2 Peter, who says everything's gone the same from the beginning of creation until now. Nothing new's going to happen. Everybody's been wrong up to this point. They're going to continue to be wrong. That's a trap. You are in a trap. You are in a snare. You're in a snare. It's the boy who cries wolf. I know how it is. A boy cries wolf. There's a wolf. There's a wolf coming. You know the old fable. Maybe it's true. I don't know. A kid is in charge of the chicken coop, and for a joke, he cries wolf. And the owners of the farm come running out with their shotguns. Where's the wolf? Where's the wolf? And the kid goes, there ain't no wolf. And the people get mad. So the kid tries to joke the next night. Wolf, wolf, wolf. And the owners come, where's the wolf? Well, they get tired of this. One night, the wolf does come. And the kid says, wolf, wolf. And this time, it's a real wolf. And the owners go, Huh, we're not being fooled by that again. And the wolf gobbles up all the chickens. And this is what's happening with, this is the last time I'll use the phrase, God help me, end time truth. Because there have been many cries of wolf, some of you are, even some of you are lulled into this, then nobody's right type of thing. Then nobody's right. And there is no date. No. It's true. Every generation has thought they're the last generation. Well, guess what? One of those generations is going to be right. You understand that, I hope. One of those generations is going to be right. There is a last generation in this eon of human futility. A generation of human futility. The days of Adam. The days of the striving of humanity. We are in them now, and we have been in them since Adam was formed from the soil and received the breath of God and became a living soul. We've been in these times. But they're going to end because God is going to do a new thing, and it will happen on a Thursday at 2 p.m. or possibly a Friday at noon. You get the point. The day arrives. I don't want you to be lulled to sleep because so many people have cried wolf. The wolf's on its way. And I don't want you to be asleep because of the false prophecies, the false date setters. It ain't my fault, is it? That some numbnuts in 1865 said, it's the end of the eon. It's not my fault, is it? It's not my fault that the Mayans quacked as the Mayans tend to do about 2012. It's not my fault, is it? I didn't invent the Y2K scare. Oh, it's the end of the world. Did I do that? Am I responsible for that? I'm not. So if I come along telling you, hey, this is the end of the eon, and you scoff at me because of the numbnuts in the past who mispredicted it, you're not giving me much respect or love, are you? But I think better of you. I know I'm not talking to the majority of you. I'm just talking to a few. Don't be a scoffer. Don't be a scoffer who says that because none of these prophecies have ever come to pass, none of these date setters have ever been right, then there is no date. Oh, my friends, you are sadly mistaken because there is a date. There's a right date. Did you know that? There is a correct date. And it's always been correct. It's been correct from the time of Adam. It's been known by God. And God tells his friends what he's doing. Jasper. You think I care about Jasper? No, I don't. But God cares about Jasper. And Mr. Nock writes about Jasper, so here we go. The ancients gave the name Jaspa. That's the Hebrew term. It's Jaspe. I like that. Jaspe. Actually, I don't. I don't like it. I just said I liked it because I thought I was supposed to say that I like it, but why pretend? I'm with friends. I don't like it. I don't like anything about Jaspa. Nothing. However, this sounds interesting. The Greek word for Jasper is Jaspis. That is a very awkward word. I don't like it. It refers to a considerable variety of precious stones. Pliny, I don't know what mother would name her son Pliny, P-L-I-N-Y, but apparently this was some kind of a writer in the ancient world, mentions 14 kinds of jasper. Isn't that fascinating? No. From sea green to sky blue, the green stones, which were the most common, were sometimes transparent. Now I'm getting interested. I love transparency. I love to see through people. I like to expose myself to other people. Metaphorically. Now I'm getting interested in translucence. I'm getting interested in something that the sun can shine through. And I think God knows this. And so he's breaking things open for me in the department of Jasper. I'm suddenly live here on this broadcast becoming interested in Jasper. They resemble the emerald, well, sure, but are not so bright and are more opaque. The crystalline jasper of the unveiling is doubtless the same as the modern plasma, a translucent green chalcedony. Am I pronouncing that right? C-H-A-L-C-E-D-O-N-Y. I'm not interested in the substance at all, which is why I'm not concerned about the pronunciation, so that is why I spelled it. Choose your own pronunciation. I'll call it chalcedony. It could be chalcedony, but that sounds like a city in Pennsylvania, so I'm going to call it chalcedony, the most valuable variety of jasper. This was also the 12th stone in the breastplate of the high priest. Okay, Exodus 28, verse 20. The breastplate of the high priest had precious gems in it. There were 12 of them. So why, again, this stuff is decided to be precious, I don't know. Why didn't they have vegetables on their breastplate, like a turnip and a carrot and a... I can't think of any other vegetables. I know there are more, but all I can think of right now is... A radish. A radish. And forms the buttress, adorns the first course of the foundations of the holy city. A first course? The first course? Like the foundation is jasper. This is found in the Unveiling, chapter 21, verses 18 through 19. And we are told that the city has no need of luminaries such as the sun and the moon because it's luminous of its own devices. The glory and the power of God is there. Unveiling 21:11. The city has the glory of God, as I just said. And the city's luminosity is like a stone most precious as crystalline jasper gem. We are reminded that the enthroned one looked like a jasper stone and a carnelian looked like one. This is so humiliating for God. But he chooses to condescend to the point where he will compare himself to a substance found in this down and dirty, hard rock, hard scrabble planet we know as Earth. Unbelievable. The enthroned one looked like a jasper stone and a carnelian. I have no idea what a carnelian is. Isn't it one of those things that changes colors when it walks in front of a rose bush? Oh no, that's a chameleon. Okay, I'm going to go to the Unveiling 4:3 just to find the first mention of jasper in the Unveiling. I'm going to give you the lowdown on all these stones. I'm forced to because this is the Revelation series. And I might become more interested in it as we go. I can feel it coming on. And he who is sitting... Let me start with verse 2 of Unveiling chapter 4. Now immediately I came to be in spirit, and lo, a throne located in heaven, and on the throne one sitting. And he who is sitting is to my vision like a jasper stone and a carnelian. Write me and tell me what the hell a carnelian is. Thank you. This one is like a jasper stone, and a rainbow around the throne is to my vision like an emerald. This I am interested in, a rainbow that looks green like an emerald. I don't like multicolored things. I don't really like the 60s and what people wore in the 60s. Love the music of the 60s, but I'm a monochrome kind of guy. It's hard to believe, but I am. And I don't like there's a line of Victoria's Secret undergarments that really makes me crazy. They have all these neon green colors now. Are women actually wearing this stuff under their clothes? Why? And they're like rainbow-colored underwear, and I just can't believe it. What happened to the simple elegance, basic black, or your baby pink? It's just... So I'm excited when a rainbow with all those seven primary colors are replaced by a wonderful green hue. I'm not a fan of green because it was the color of my high school, but I do like the fact of a light green. I do like the fact of an emerald green, especially if it's translucent. And around the throne, I perceive 24 thrones. And on the 24 thrones, elders sitting clothed in white garments and on their heads, golden wreaths. God is crazy attracted to gold. He loves gold. But I think this too is God condescending to consider what we like. Do you remember Burl Ives, who was the snowman in Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer? And he sang a song about silver and gold, everyone wishes, except for Martin Zender, for silver and gold. Humans love it, so God catches on to that, and he says, I'm really going to blow their minds, because I'm going to take a substance that humans pine for and crave, and I'm going to make it translucent. I'm going to do something new with it on a new earth, which is completely appropriate. New. And I'm going to make you see through it, and I'm going to shine light through it, and it's going to dazzle you like a Hollywood movie opening times 5, 6. You're excited about the next 2 days, I know, because in the next two, maybe one day, maybe two, start, take it easy over the weekend. I know I've kind of blown your mind today at the end of the week. That was my plan. I think I've succeeded. And starting Monday, we're going to look at each individual gem mentioned by God. It's important to God, therefore it must be. And I think it's becoming important to me.